related to Corral of Rights. And my only experience, direct experience, was in connection with the work Granger Brown did in the Turner Valley field. So I was very much aware of the principles. I was aware of the physical chemistry and the thermodynamic concepts involved, because production quotas were normally set. Production quotas were beginning to be set, recognizing the fluid under the land in the oil property. And this involved, of course, the an understanding of the behavior of the oil and gas underground.
At what time in this process did you become dean at the university?
I think it was 1959. Does that check?
Yes, and you were still involved with the board during that time?
Yes, I was. Let me back up a little bit. In the early 40s, Dean Wilson passed away. He was succeeded by a civil engineer and a close friend of mine whose name was Bob Hardy. Hardy had an extensive consulting practice, and in, I think it was 59, he decided to sever his connection with the university and to continue and expand his consulting business. So at that time, I was invited by the president to become the dean of the faculty. The president, of course, was well aware of my association with the board. I guess I was vice chairman of the board at that time. And it was agreed that I would relinquish my post as chairman of the department and take on the deanship, but I would continue to work part-time in Calgary for the board. And I continued that to February of 1963. When I moved to Calgary and resigned from the deanship, and interestingly enough, Bob Hardy was reappointed. And at that time, I became a full-time member of the board. I've forgotten when I became chairman, but it's in the write-up.
Did you, do you have any particular recollections of your career as dean, any particular activities you undertook during that period that you want to relate? Do you have any building
problems? Yes, there were a few. The faculty was expanding. It was obvious that we needed additional space, and I was quite active in pushing for a new building for the Faculty of Engineering, and that was successful. We got additional space. There was a growing demand.
Right around the 1960s.
Yeah, right around 1960. There was a growing demand for a university in Calgary. And the University of Calgary was established initially as a branch of the University of Alberta. And branches of the departments. No, that's not right. A branch of the Faculty of Engineering was established in Calgary, a branch of the Alberta faculty. And the first 2 years of engineering were given in Calgary. And at that time, this was right around 61, 62, 63. In 63, when I moved to Calgary, I was appointed professor of engineering at the University of Calgary. I was given the broader title because Bob Hardy, whom I had succeeded and who then succeeded me, felt I could be more use if I was not restricted to chemical and petroleum, but I assisted in really in the administration of the engineering program in Calgary. So I continued in association with the University of Calgary for several years, and in short time departments were established, the four major departments. A dean was appointed. I became a part-time professor. Well, I was always a part-time professor. I gave a couple of graduate courses for a while, but 90% of my time was with the Conservation Board, the name of which was then changed to Oil and Gas Conservation Board instead of the longer Petroleum and Natural Gas. And then...
What did you sense as the appeal for, in effect, diminishing and finally severing your direct ties with the university and moving to the Conservation Board?
It was a difficult decision for me because I enjoyed the academic world very much, and I became quite involved in research at the University of Alberta and did a fair amount of research. And it was a tough decision, but I recognized pretty soon that I couldn't be doing both. And I finally said, well, I think I'll stay with the industry because I could see it expanding, and I got a great deal of satisfaction out of the application of scientific principles to the regulation of the industry. And I think with due modesty I can say that our board here sort of led the world in this area, because unlike so many regulatory agencies elsewhere, our board was totally non-political. We were appointees of the cabinet, but certainly not political appointees. And we were appointed on the basis of qualifications.
All the members of the board then were engineers?
They were all professionally qualified.
Mm-hmm.
McKinnon was a chartered accountant, but he had years of experience in government and in the administration of mineral rights. Mr. Goodall was a professional geologist. I was an engineer. And over the years, the members of the board have all been professionally qualified people, and none of them have had political ties at all. So it was a favorable, very favorable environment. But returning to your question, it was a tough decision. And you can see my reluctance to make it, because I didn't let go of the university completely. I kept on. But then I found that I had travel and I couldn't do justice even to a small class of graduate students. I found I had to miss lectures and reschedule lectures. So it wasn't satisfactory.
Well, you became president of the Conservation Board.
Chairman.
Okay, chairman. And what did you do in that office to characterize the activities of the board?
Well, I guess I could sum it up this way and say I endeavored to run the organization. But we had a The organization had grown. We had several technical departments, what we called an oil department, a gas department, a geological department, a development department, a technical library, a legal department, a big accounting department. In addition to normal financial accounting, which was not a big part of it, we had what we called the production accounting responsibility. In this province, all companies producing oil and gas have to report their production by wells to the board on a monthly basis. And those production records, the maintenance of them is quite a big job. So this was the organization that had to be run, so to speak. But the real job was to handle problems of industry that were brought to the board, or problems that the board recognized within the industry. For example, the board looked at the Redwater oil field, and there was gas being produced unavoidably with the oil. The board recognized that for a while, it was uneconomic to gather that gas, and flaring of gas was allowed. But we monitored it regularly, and as the volume of gas being flared increased, we then called on the operators to show cause why they should not institute a conservation system. We did that by calling a public hearing, and the hearing was conducted by the then three board members, myself as chairman and two other board members. I guess with that particular example, I wasn't the chairman. B. McKinnon as chairman, but I was in that role later on. But this is indicative of the kind of thing we dealt with. We would hear all the evidence, and then we would make a ruling. In the case of Redwater, we made a ruling against industry's wishes that they were no longer authorized to flare gas. They had two choices. They could shut in their wells, or they could conserve the gas. Well, obviously, they conserved the gas. So we gave them 8 months or whatever it was to install the facilities. Another illustration might be in an oil field where our understanding of the reservoir situation indicated that it would only result in a 15% recovery if it was operated the way it was, but there was a probability that recovery could be increased to 50% if a water flood were introduced. We would have a public hearing to receive industry's views on the future way of producing the field. And in some cases, the industry would come forward and say, we agree the field can be water flooded, and we would then approve the water flooding subject to certain conditions. We would make sure, for example, that, I won't go into the conditions, but we had countless problems relating to drilling, spacing, correlative rights, enhanced recovery, conservation of gas, and all of those things. And they were constantly before us. And we would have public hearings maybe 3 or 4 days a week. Many of the problems became routine. And then we devised a system where the hearings would be held by examiners appointed from the staff, and the board members would not get involved until the examiners submitted a report to the board. And some matters became so routine that they would be handled at the departmental level. But this was the broad nature of the work.
You've emphasized the fact that the board members were appointed by the cabinet.
Yes.
But it was not a political appointment.
Correct.
A government agency then. How did you view your principal responsibility to help the industry see what was best for their future, or were you a protector of the resources for the people of Canada, or did you find that those were the same thing?
That's a very astute question. we took our role to be to do the best we could within practical reason and within reasonable economics for the people of the province of Alberta. That was our mandate. I might say that we were appointed by the board, by the cabinet, the members. The board ran its own show. We were funded 50% by a tax which we levied on industry, and 50% by a grant from the government. And it was interesting that the way the legislation is written, the board determined its requirements. Say its requirements were $4 million for a certain year. They're much more now, I might say. And we then levied a tax to raise $2 million. And in effect, we submitted a bill to the government for the other $2 million. That's the way it worked. We were not the agents of the industry. But we tried to do things in a way that was reasonable and that was economic. And I think we maintained the respect of industry. Industry knew that our job was to do what we thought was best for the people of Alberta. But it respected the fact that we didn't ask industry to do things that were totally unreasonable.
In a sense, continued flourishing of the industry was in the interest of the people of Alberta.
Exactly.
You continued in that role until 1978, I believe.
Right. I remember that date.
Is there any thing more about the board activities in which you were involved that needs to be recorded here?
Yes, there is one other thing that I think is interesting. The board was originally created in 1938. The raisin d'etre was the Turner Valley oil field. It was a very small organization. After 47 and 48, with the explosion of the industry, the board grew to a very large organization. And I've forgotten the dates, but the coal industry had flourished in the early years, but with the explosion of the oil industry, the coal industry became less dominant and less of a factor in the province. The coal industry was not regulated to any extent. What government involvement there was administered through the Department of Lands and Mines. And the government, and this would have been in the early 60s, I guess, decided that it might make more sense to have a technical organization between the government and the industry. So to make a long story short, the board was given responsibility for such regulation as was needed for the coal industry. And about the same time, there was quite an expansion in the hydroelectric industry. And there had been an organization called the Alberta Power Commission that advised the government concerning hydroelectric matters. And the government again decided that it would be better, on the retirement of the chairman of that commission, if that were handled in a more formal way. So there were two additional responsibilities put on the then Oil and Gas Conservation Board. One was the operation of the coal industry, and the other one was the hydroelectric industry. I remember I had a lot of fun with our legal counsel developing the legislation for the hydro and electric side of it, because there had been literally no legislation. And of course there was public concern about the routing of power lines and the construction of dams, so on, public and environmental concern. Then there was one other change. The regulation of pipelines had been handled through the Department of Mines and of Lands and Mines, and it seemed more logical to the government that that also would be handled by the board, because it tied in so closely with the board's regulation of the producing facilities in any case. So with these added responsibilities, we changed the name of the board to Energy Resources Conservation Board, and it remained under that name to very recently, within two years ago. The Public Utilities Board was joined with the Energy Resources Conservation Board to establish what is now known as the Alberta Energy and Utilities Board. So that's about all I'd want to add in connection with the board.
Okay. Then, in 1978, you discontinued your direct association with the Conservation Board, and what did you do then?
Well, I had been 30 years with the board, because I started in 48, although I was only part-time for a while, but I had been 30 years in total, and I decided I would take early retirement. What would I have been in 78? I would have been 61. Decided to take early retirement and do some consulting and have a little more flexibility. And I can remember very clearly, after I made that decision and announced it to the Premier, my colleagues, I started wondering how I was going to set myself up. And I got a phone call from the then senior man of the Royal Bank of Canada here in Calgary, senior man in Calgary of the Royal Bank. And he said that he had heard that I was taking early retirement and was going to be doing some consulting, and he would like to talk to me. So we had lunch, and he said, "George, we would like to have someone like you to advise us generally on oil and gas matters, because we have a lot of business, a lot of relations with the oil and gas industry. We don't have much in the way of informed people in our shop." And he said, "We'd be happy to supply you with an office and a secretary, and ask for you to commit not more than 2 days a week to us, and you have the rest of your time." And he said, "We'll give you a little pay also." Well, it was great, because I inherited an office, a very fine secretary, electric typewriter, fax machine. Well, no, that was before fax, but all the gear you need. And that worked very well. And that was in 78. I continued that for 10 years. And during that time, I worked with the bank, of course, but I had maybe a couple dozen other clients of various durations and in various parts of the world. In 88, I decided before the bank fired me that I better resign. So I resigned from the bank, moved my office right here, and I've continued consulting, but on a lower level. I try to work no more than about a quarter of the time.
Is most of your consulting work in the area of petroleum, or do you continue to be involved in the variety of energy sources?
No, it's mostly in petroleum, but I recall one substantial assignment relating to pipelines and one assignment relating to the hydroelectric industry, but mostly petroleum. And less and less technical and more government industry relations, management problems relating to the industry.
What do you think led to this particular development of interest for you? You started off as a trainee in the petroleum industry, and then you were in academia. Now you are consulting a variety of clients on management public policy matters. Do you see any particular watershed at which your interest in this public policy area developed, or was that a result of the years of association with the Conservation Board?
The latter. Now, I say that that my work is mostly non-technical. There have been a number of exciting exceptions to that. One of them the relationship goes way back to the early 40s when I was interested in the flow in pipelines of non-Newtonian fluids. And a few years back, I was called by the Alyeska Pipeline Company, which is the company that transports the Prudhoe Bay crude oil from the Prudhoe Bay oil field to the southern coast of Alaska, where it's then picked up by tanker and taken down the west coast. And that company was aware of some of my early work and publications relating to the flow of crude oil and the anomalous properties and behavior, particularly at low temperatures where these properties become prevalent. And it said that it was planning a series of tests so that it could do some forecasting as to pipeline requirements in the future when the mix of its crude oils would change and the volumes would alter and the flow rates would change. And would I advise on these tests? Well, that was a very exciting return to my early days, and I got out my early publications and refreshed my mind on these things. I had a very interesting time with the Alyeska pipeline.
And solved their problems?
I think we helped, yes. Helped them in their understanding of the behavior of the material.